Thanks, John. Appreciate that. And it is good to be here, standing before you. I will admit that it has been a while since I've given a lesson on this kind of short notice. But you'll notice our reading tonight. There's a reason for that. I have in my folio here several lessons in my back pocket, so to speak, just in case I get the opportunity to speak. This is not the first time I've done this. This is not the first time I've taught this lesson. And I think the idea of being prepared is a great lesson to discuss and to do on short notice. Maybe that's just the way my mind works, or doesn't work, as the case might be. But the first time I think I did this was for a small group in Maryland, where I was quite literally visiting them. My mom was worshiping there at the time, and whoever was supposed to speak didn't show up, and they kind of looked at me because I was the only man there, and it's like, okay, so got up and we talked about this. The idea of being prepared, and it's important for us to be thinking about this, because as Christians, we're going to be laughed at, we're going to be scoffed at, we're going to be mocked for what we believe. I think several have been posting on Facebook about this whole issue with the bathrooms and whatnot. The world has gone crazy. And that is a recurring theme throughout the scriptures. You can see over and over again this idea that the world has gone crazy and there's nothing new under the sun. But what are we being prepared? What are we preparing ourselves for? Well, it's the second coming of Christ, because we don't know when this is going to be. We know it's coming, but we don't know when. And so tonight we want to examine some things in Matthew chapter 25, among other passages, and note the idea of being prepared. Well, if you skip ahead to the next parable, in beginning in verse 14, the parable of the talents, that's talking about how to prepare and what to do to prepare. So the two go kind of hand in hand together. So if I ever get the opportunity to speak on short notice again, you know what the next lesson is going to be on. Chapter 24 is a subject of a lot of controversy among scholars and such, because is Jesus talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, or is he talking about the second coming, or a little bit of both? Doesn't matter. I'll just flat out say it doesn't matter. He could have been talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. He could have been talking about the second coming. Either way, the same thing applies for us as far as being prepared for that judgment. And when we see in the scriptures, and we saw this when we looked at the minor prophets, and when we examined throughout the Old Testament, this idea of judgment, the day of judgment, is destruction. It is going to feel like the end of the world. You go back through over and over and over again, and it feels like the end of the world for the nation that is being judged. And so let's keep this in mind as we are examining things here. We read Matthew 25. We're also going to be spending some time in 2 Peter 3. And those are two great passages to keep in mind about end times, about what it's going to feel like with the way when judgment comes, and what we need to do, and our responses, and what we should be looking forward to, as 2 Peter 3 talks about. And also Hebrews 10, verse 25. In the scriptures, wisdom and foolishness are very often contrasted with one another. I mean, that's kind of the theme of the book of Proverbs, as we've been looking at on Sunday mornings. Psalm 1 begins, the very beginning of the Psalms talks about that contrast between wisdom and foolishness. And, of course, the passage that we just read. Quick summary, you've got these 10 virgins go out with lamps to await the arrival of the bridegroom. Half take no oil, half take some extra oil. The bridegroom is delayed in his coming. His arrival is announced, the virgins trim their lamps, and the foolish ones find that they're running out of oil for their oil lamps. They plead with the others to share some of their oil, but they refuse because, well, there's simply not enough for everybody to go around. The foolish have to go and get some, but, you know, of course, it's kind of late. He comes. Those that are prepared go in to the wedding. The door is shut. And those that were not prepared get locked down. Fairly simple. That's kind of the quick, high-level overview. I like to collect oil lamps. I've got a few that had some significance to me. One belonged to my great-grandfather. When my grandfather passed a couple of years ago, the one thing that I really wanted from his house was my great-grandfather's oil lamp. And I did some horse trading with my uncle to get that. I actually got a pretty good deal out of it, if I might say so. Which I know we're not really supposed to brag about that, but I got a good deal. Because it was the one thing I really wanted. And I just say that as an aside. I like oil lamps. There's something about them, that the glow that's there, the hurricane globe that is on there. Not that we ever have hurricanes here in Charleston, and not that we're ever without power or anything like that. There's a necessity that's even, I mean, directly applicable to us today is making sure that we have those provisions on hand. Well, the meaning of this parable. Well, the main message is pretty obvious, I think. It doesn't take too much to figure out when he says in verse 13, "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." There's that need for constant watchfulness. We don't know when Jesus is coming. All these knuckleheads that get out there and say, well, he's coming on this date and this time, you can pretty much guarantee that's not when it's going to happen. I can feel when what was his name, Camping would say, on this date, you know, that's the day the Lord's not going to come. I think it's pretty, we can safely say that, because the scriptures are very clear that we don't know, but we need to be prepared for when it does come. Turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians 5. And I like what Paul says here to the brethren in Thessalonica. Beginning in verse 1, 1 Thessalonians 5, beginning verse 1. "But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober." I don't have to tell you these things. I don't have to remind you. You know good and well about this. And that's what we have to be reminded of, that we know good and well what is going to happen. But we do need that occasional reminder, that exhortation to keep pressing on. Peter makes the same point in 2 Peter chapter 3. And I really like what Peter has to say. 2 Peter 3, beginning in verse 10. "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat?" In other words, as Christians, we should be looking forward to this. We want this to come. Remember when you're a kid, the night before Christmas, could you sleep? You were anxious. You so wanted Christmas. Okay, when's it going to be here? When's it going to be here? When's it going to be here? Couldn't get to sleep, right? Those of you that are parents with little kids understand that as well. From the other end, well, we need to be that kind of excited about the coming of Jesus, about his return. Is he here yet? Is he here yet? Do we look forward to that return, or do we dread it? not knowing the day or the hour of his coming, we need to be ready. And this is the basic message of the parable. Okay. You know I'm not done yet because I've only been up here for a few minutes. So where else am I going with this? Well, we're just like those virgins that are awaiting the bridegroom. Some are wise, some aren't. Preparation is so important for all aspects of our lives. How many of you got caught in the rain this afternoon after services? Yeah. Okay, good. I thought for a moment there I was going to be the only one because I did. As we were leaving, it had started to rain, and of course, they were parked. Cookie and Shirley are parked a lot closer to the building than I was, and I did get wet. My umbrella was in a nice, safe, dry spot like I usually keep it. I keep one in the car just in case I get caught in the rain, which, yeah. How many of us have cell phones? Who doesn't? I got my first cell phone back, the late 90s, early 2000, something like that, for those just so possible emergencies when you're out and about on the road. You belong to AAA and things like that. We have flashlights, we have candles, we have our kind of emergency preparations at the house, right? I know where my flashlights are, where some of the candles and things like that are in case the lights go out. I can find them in the dark. The lights never go out in the middle of the day. They always go out at night, it seems like. We have insurance for our houses, for our homes, for our health and whatnot. We're prepared for these emergencies. Are we surprised that they happen? No. We're only surprised at the timing. Are we going to be surprised when Jesus returns? No. The only surprise is going to be the timing. We don't know when that's going to be. Those that are wise diligently prepare themselves for Jesus coming. They heed, they obey the call to grow in the grace and knowledge of the Lord that Peter is writing to the brethren about in 2 Peter chapter 3. Well, really throughout the entirety of his second epistle, he's telling them to grow in that knowledge, grow in the grace and knowledge of the Lord. And preparation is part of that. Preparation is an important part of our maturation process, because as we transition from being children to being adults, we have to prepare for things. We understand that saving for a rainy day. We understand putting some things in place for emergencies or for if this should happen, having contingent plans. When you're a kid, you don't have backup plans. I mean, this is what we're going to do, and if that, okay. We don't have a backup. As we get to be older, we understand that need for that backup. Well, unfortunately, there are some in the faith that are foolish. They know the Lord is coming, but they're unprepared. They're like the ones, if we go back to Matthew chapter 24, turn back there, Matthew 24, verses 48 and 49. Talking about the evil servant, or the contrast of the faithful and the evil. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him, at an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. And there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He's warned what's going to happen to those that are unprepared. Are we ready for that? Are we like the wise virgins, or are we like the foolish ones? Another thing that we need to be careful of is we can't trust in our previous accomplishments. If you look in chapter 25, verse 8, the foolish did have some oil. It wasn't that they didn't have any oil. They had some, but they didn't have enough. They were running out. They were prepared, kind of, which means that they weren't prepared. They had foolishly trusted in what they had done in the past. We can't rest on our laurels. We need to have the same attitude that Paul had in Philippians 3, that we keep pressing on. We haven't attained anything yet. We keep pressing on, looking ahead. Are we depending on what we've done in the past? What we've done in the past is good. But unfortunately, when it comes to getting to heaven, that and a buck gets us a cup of coffee, or actually $2, I guess now, gets us a cup of coffee. And another thing that we have to be mindful of is this preparation, this preparedness, is not transferable. I can't prepare for Tom or for Jerry. They can't prepare for me. It'd be nice if they could. Then I could kind of sit back and kind of take it easy, right? No. The wise could not share their oil with the virgin, with those that were foolish. We can't ride someone else's coattails into heaven. And one of the things that we examined when we were looking at in the study of the minor prophets is that judgment, destruction, is done on a collective basis. We see the nations being destroyed. We see Israel and Judah and such being destroyed. We see the end of the world eventually being destroyed. But salvation only comes to that remnant, to those individuals. And we'll examine that even further as we get into Ezekiel. We can't be saved by association. Just because we quote, belong to the Church of Christ, does not mean we're going to heaven. That's not automatic in that sense that, well, we've placed our membership here that, okay, I'm going to heaven. Or I married to this person, or my parents were good people. That does not work for us today. It did not work for those who were God's people in the Old Testament. Each of us has to have our own name in the book of life, as we see in Revelation 20. Are we trusting in our relationships with others, whether it's our family relationships or our relationships with the congregation or the brotherhood? Are we trusting in that to get us into heaven, or have we prepared ourselves through our own obedience to the Word of God? Note also, going back to Matthew 25, that those that are unprepared, they don't have a second chance. Think about that for a moment. They did not have a second chance. They ran out of oil, had to go and get someone. When they came back, doors were closed. No one else admitted. We're not going to get that do-over when judgment comes. Either we were faithful and obedient, or we're not. There's no kind of semi-sort of possible maybe. No. It's very cut and dry, very stark. And as human beings, we don't like those stark choices. We don't like black and white thinking. We like nuance. We like gray. We want to rationalize and justify things, because that's what we do as human beings. The main passage of the main message of the parable: being prepared at all times for the coming of Christ. We need to have our flashlights ready for when the lights go out. Can we put our hands on those flashlights? Are we prepared for when Jesus comes? Or are we going to be scrambling? Because if we have to scramble, we're too late. And maintaining that state of preparation. Right after 9/11, the government had all these warnings and the different levels and the threat levels and the codes and the color scheme that they were using and all of that. And I forget what all the colors were. To be honest, I didn't care. I mean, either it was going to happen or it wasn't. I at the time, I was working in Arlington, Virginia. I heard all the fire trucks responding to the Pentagon. And what are you going to do? Nothing, to be honest. If somebody wants to kill you, they're going to find a way. That's kind of human nature. But we have all these alerts and everything, or had them at the time. We need to be on that high alert for when Jesus comes. We need to be anxious for his return, that as Peter described in 2 Peter 3. Now, having said that, we need to be careful that we don't get ourselves all wound up in a knot and worry ourselves to death over this. What if he's coming today? No. But we live our lives with that full expectation that it's going to come. Because that's one of the few things that we can guarantee in life. We talk about the guarantees, that the only two things that are certain are death and taxes. Well, the return of Jesus is in that same category. we're not going to be surprised that it happens. We're simply going to be surprised at the timing of it. And we need to be careful not to let this world preoccupy us, because that's very easy for us to have happen, because we live in this world. We live with deadlines. We have jobs. We have family responsibilities. We have obligations in this life. People that are depending on us, that are counting on us for a variety of things. But we need to be careful. Turn to Luke chapter 21. Luke 21. Beginning in verse 34. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Don't be weighed down with the cares and the affairs of this life, the worldly lusts, the worldly concerns, those things that distract us, take our minds off of what we're doing. Think about when we're driving in an unfamiliar place. We're driving in a congested area. We tend to be more focused, more on alert for what it is that we're doing. We may turn the volume down on the radio. We'll keep our distractions to a minimum as much as we can, because we're in an unfamiliar setting. We know we have to pay attention. We have to be focused. As Christians, we do the same thing. We can't allow the affairs of this life to weigh us down and, well, there goes my exit. There goes the turn that I needed to make. We need to be steadfast in prayer. Watchfulness and prayer go hand in hand. And that's really what preparation is that watchfulness. And we watch by praying. Ephesians 6 and 18, Mark 13, Colossians 4, verse 2, all talk about watching, praying. Are we doing that? Are we maintaining that state of readiness, that state of alert? It's in prayer that we can assure that we're counted worthy as we confess our sins. We need to be diligent to grow in the grace and knowledge of Christ, as we saw in 2 Peter chapter 3. And then going back to a passage that I think those of you that know me know is one of my favorites, 2 Peter 1, beginning in verse 5. The various traits and attributes that we're to take on, applying all diligence and add these. And if they're yours and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful. The purpose of that is to make sure that our calling, our election, is sure. That's how we know we're going to heaven, is when we do these things, they're increasing, we're not unfruitful, we're not useless, we're growing, we're developing, we're maturing. That's how we know we'll be able to make it to heaven. Are we prepared? As Christians, are we prepared for Jesus returning now? Or do we have to scramble? If we have to scramble, then we're not ready. We're not prepared. Are you prepared? The parable teaches that there's a great day coming. A day in those which we're going to have two different groups. Those who prepared themselves and those who didn't. I can think of no more devastating words than for those that think themselves prepared, think that they're going to heaven, and then to hear Jesus say, "I don't know you." Imagine how painful that's going to be. Disappointing is just That is such a far understatement. If the Lord were to come today, would He find us watching? Would He find you watching? Would He find me watching? Would He even know us? Think about that for a moment. Here we are doing the things that we talk about, doing the things that get us laughed at, get us scorned, mocked, scoffed. But if we're not doing what God says, if we're not fully obeying Him as we should, He doesn't know us. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Are you ready? If not, you need to make yourself ready. You need to, for those that have never obeyed the gospel, obey the gospel. But once we've done that, it is very easy for us, for the religious world, to just kind of say, okay, you've checked that off, you're done. If you were to ask the average person on the street, they would say that once you've been saved, right? Makes sense. It's kind of intuitive. But it's wrong. And unfortunately, there's a lot of wrong teaching that is going to cost the souls of a lot of people. We need to make sure that we are not in that situation. Are you prepared? If you need to make yourself right with the Lord, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.